This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Series. It's really the fourth one in the series. Those who haven't heard the previous three will still be able to follow tonight's quite appropriately. There's no, each one is self-standing, but we're going to use some of the principles that we developed over the past 3 weeks in order to understand a very difficult medrash, a very well known but rather difficult medrash, and to be able to see it in its proper perspective. Once again, we find in today's sedra that Shabbos precedes the detailed instructions for putting together the various utensils and garments of the Mishkan and the Mishkan itself. Shortly after the opening of the parsha, we're told, "Kechu meitchem trumo laHashem kol nediv libo," take a donation from every person, from every generous person, to Hashem, gold, silver, copper, and so on. But preceding that, in the very opening of the Sedra, is the instruction of Sheshes Yomim Teoseh Melocho, that your work shall be done in 6 days. Uvayoyim Hashvi Yielochem Kodesh Shabbos Shabbos Shabbosoyim LaHashem. It will be a Shabbos for Hashem. Kolo Yisevoy Melocho Yumos. Anybody who does Melocho will die. So again, we have the laws of the Mishkan being preceded by the laws of Shabbos, as we had previously, and again the principle that we developed from that was the understanding that as central as the Mishkan is, as central as the Tabernacle and the Beis HaMikdash is to the fulfillment of our whole function as a nation, Shabbos is even more central. And when there's a conflict between the construction of the Beis HaMikdash or the laws of Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos take precedence. We don't allow the laws of the Shabbos to be set aside in order to construct the Beis HaMikdash. And we explained last week why it was so that Shabbos was so central, and what it really meant that on the seventh day God stopped working, and why that was different to God's status prior to the beginning of Bereshit. But prior to the beginning of the creation, God wasn't working. So what was so special about the seventh day? And we explained, using principles of the previous weeks, that the value of an item or of an experience is determined by its cost. And anything that doesn't have a cost to it doesn't have value to it. That's the only way that we know how to express value, and in fact how to create value. We create value by attaching a cost to something, and by creating a demand at that cost. Even if you're the only person who demands it at that cost, that's an order, then it has a value to you. That means I am willing to put my hands in my pocket and to pay a certain amount of money for an item or for an experience. That means I place a value on it. I'm willing to make a sacrifice. I'm willing to work for it. I'm willing to extend myself for it in order to have that sacrifice. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Excuse me, half a minute. And that prior to the creation of the world and prior to the creation of time, there wasn't a cost attached to the keeping of Shabbos. Yes, that's true that until God started creating the world, he wasn't doing anything, so he had one mighty long Shabbos. But that long Shabbos didn't have a cost attached to it. He didn't have to stop anything. He didn't have to sacrifice anything in order to rest, so to say, as he was before that time. Once Sheshes Yomei HaMaaseh started, once there were 6 days of creation, God actually had to stop the dynamics of creation in order to have a Shabbos. Had he not stopped that dynamic, creation would have continued. Creation would not have finished after 6 days. Which seems to imply that there were certain things left undone. Which seems to imply, if we say that there was a cost, that means God had to stop doing what he was doing. And when it says, Vayechal bayuim hashvi, that Hashem finished on the seventh day, and Chazal say, but he didn't finish on the seventh day, he finished before the seventh day. And the Gemara answers, yes, but to an ordinary human being, it was so close. Hashem, we've got to stop doing our work a little while before Shabbos. Those of us who can afford to try really to stop doing it at midday, those who can't, don't stop a little bit later, an hour before Shabbos if it's really pressed, half an hour before Shabbos, but we don't like to go right until the last minute. In fact, we take Shabbos in a little bit before Shabbos really comes in, so as to make sure we don't come too close. But Hashem, who knows exactly what time everything is, was able to work until the last fraction of a millisecond before Shabbos. But to an untrained human eye, it appeared as if God actually finished on Shabbos. That's why it says, Vayechal bayom hashvi. And it doesn't say, Vayechal bayom hashishi, that God finished. It doesn't say he finished on the sixth day. It says he finished on the seventh day, as if he was actually creating on the seventh day. But Chazal said that's an appearance. It appeared to us, to the human being, it would have appeared as if he finished creating on the seventh day. What was it that he was busy creating right until the last moment, and in fact interrupted? The Or HaChaim in Bereishis on Vayechulu brings a Chazal that there were, he was creating forces, and he did stop creating those forces as Shabbos came in, and those forces then became destructive forces. That's how the negative, that's how the forces of evil, so to say, whatever those forces are, the destructive negative forces in the world, came into being. Had Hashem, so to say, had the chance to finish them off, they wouldn't have been destructive, but he left them unfinished. And sometimes when you leave something unfinished, it's more destructive than if you wouldn't have started it in the first place. And Hashem leaves it unfinished. And the Rachaim asks, why did Hashem do that? Hashem could have rushed the job a little bit. He could have done it quicker. In fact, he says, Hashem could have made the whole world in one go. Why did he take 6 days over it? The Rachaim explains, because Hashem wanted to teach us that principle, that you've got to stop when Shabbos comes in, no matter what the consequences. Even if you're in the middle of something, and by leaving it over there, what you've left is going to be destructive. And look at all the destruction there's been in the world as a result of that stopping in the middle. Still, that's what Shabbos has to do. Shabbos is so important, there's nothing other than life that Shabbos sets aside. And the only reason that Shabbos sets life aside, that life sets Shabbos aside, is not because life is more important than Shabbos. That's not the reason. Life is not more important than Shabbos. Shabbos is more important than life. It's an important thing to know. The only reason we're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos, the only reason we're allowed to set Shabbos aside in order to save a life, is because by saving the life there'll be more Shabbos, that person will keep Shabbos. So you'll say, so what happens about a person who doesn't keep Shabbos? Well, quite a question. Not so simple that you can break Shabbos to save the life of a person who doesn't keep Shabbos. The din is you can. And the reason is because hopefully he'll come to keep Shabbos. But again, what drives us, what motivates us to allow ourselves to break the Shabbos for saving a life, is not that life is more holy than Shabbos. It's because Shabbos is more holy than Shabbos. And to facilitate another Jew keeping a Shabbos, we do it. So you'll ask then, what about a Goy? What about a non-Jew? Are you allowed to break the Shabbos to save the life of a non-Jew? If we hold that Shabbos is more valuable than life, and the only reason you can break Shabbos to save a life is because that life will keep other Shabboses, so you're breaking one Shabbos in order to keep other Shabboses, what about a non-Jew's life? The non-Jew is not going to keep Shabbos. So again, strictly speaking, the din is that you cannot break the Shabbos to save a non-Jew's life. And the only reason that we allow it is because some terrible things could result from that. Imagine a situation where a Jewish doctor refuses to go out to save a non-Jewish life. What do you think is going to happen next time a non-Jewish doctor is called upon to save a Jewish life? He also won't go out, quite rightly so. And the result is the Jewish people who are able to keep Shabbos will not be able to keep Shabbos because they're going to die. So in order to allow for people to save each other's lives, we can't start racially discriminating as to who we do and who we don't and so on. But it's not so simple. The fact is, the halacha is, that you save a life. It doesn't matter whose life. You save a life on Shabbos. But the reasoning behind it all the way, the reasoning is, because in the long term, by saving a person's life, whether it's a Jewish life or a non-Jewish life, it's going to impact positively on the degree and the level of Shmira Shabbos in the future. That's the reason. It's not because life is more holy than Shabbos. It's not. Shabbos is more holy than life. Because without the principle of Shabbos, as we explained last week, life is meaningless. If we start messing around with Shabbos, if we start sacrificing Shabbos, life is meaningless and the Beis HaMikdash is meaningless. Everything becomes meaningless. Shabbos becomes absolutely central. When the principle of Shabbos is lost, then the principle of life itself is lost. And what was the principle of Shabbos that we discussed last week? The principle of Shabbos is the ability to trade in material things for spiritual things. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is the ability to buy leisure, the ability to buy a rich experience. Before Shabbos was created, you could only trade in material things for material things. You could only buy objects, you could buy assets with money. The chiddush of Shabbos is that you can buy an experience with money as well. You can make a sacrifice of income, and with that you can buy kedusha, you can buy sanctity. And that's why in this instruction in the beginning of our parasha, it's sheshis yomim te'aseh. It doesn't just say keep the Shabbos, don't work on Shabbos. It says sheshis yomim te'aseh malacha. Work can be done on the sixth day, uvayom hashvi, and the seventh day in that cycle. The whole idea of Shabbos is to sacrifice. And you remember last week we said we didn't like the word sacrifice, rather the word invest. Sacrifice, the word, that English word sacrifice, is a Christian term, it's not a Jewish term. We don't have sacrifices. Even in the Beis Hamikdash, even in the temple, we have korbonos. A korban is not a sacrifice. The term sacrifice is not a Jewish concept. Sacrifice means just to give it up, just to throw it up. We don't believe in giving anything up, throwing anything up. We believe in investing. And you invest only when there's a return. And even a sacrifice has to be for a return. One's willing to make a sacrifice if there's a return. Person is willing to make a sacrifice for his child's education. Person is willing to make a sacrifice now in order to have benefit later on. For a sacrifice, there has to be a return. So let's not call it sacrifice, let's call it an investment. Before Shabbos was created, you could invest assets and your returns would be assets. That's all. Shabbos comes along and says, Sheshis yomim te'aseh malacha, 6 days you work and you're producing assets, and you stop producing assets on Shabbos. That is the cost of Shabbos. Uvayom hashvi, you'll stop doing that, and yiyeh lochem kodesh, then you'll have kedusha. Shabbos, shabbosun lashem. So you can purchase kedusha. You can purchase sanctity. You can invest in sanctity. That's the chiddush of Shabbos. That didn't exist before. And I believe, although I haven't seen it anywhere, that if Shabbos wasn't created, then that whole concept of leisure wouldn't have been created. That whole concept of being able to purchase a quality of life rather than just an asset wouldn't really have been there. We wouldn't have had that ability, there wouldn't have been that tendency, there wouldn't have been that desire or that facility to be able to purchase a qualitative experience with an asset, to be able to invest money in something which is a qualitative experience. Comes Shabbos, and that gives us the ability to do so. And with that comes a lot of understanding, and that really then becomes the meaning of life. Life then becomes an issue of investing in a future, and one begins to see the whole connection between finance and economics on the one hand and spirituality on the other hand. It all works the same way. The whole concept of finance is to be able to invest present value money in future value money, and what you've got to work out is to make sure that it's a good investment. You take 100 Rand now, and you work out with inflation what that 100 Rand is going to be worth in 5 years' time. And if you're offered an investment that's going to give you a return that is higher than that, then you're making money. That's how you work it out. So you make a cheshbon, you calculate. What is the present value of my money? What is the future value of my money going to be? How does that future value compare to the real value at that time in terms of inflation as it's projected? And I can work out if I'm gaining on it. So we're willing to take money now that I could spend and choose not to spend it, but rather to invest it in order to get more money than I've got at the moment at a time somewhere down in the future. That's how finance and economics works. Torah works exactly the same way. We have to be willing to invest certain assets now in order to have income of a much larger quantity at a later stage. And that we see from Shabbos, to be able to take, otherwise it's to invest spiritual in spiritual or physical in physical. That's how it would have been. But if you want spiritual assets, you have to invest spirituality. So you invest your mind, you invest your thinking, and you can get spiritual benefit out of that. You want money, you invest your money in an investment instrument, and you'll get money as a result of that. But the ability to invest money and to get kedusha, that comes from Shabbos. That's what Shabbos is. And that then expands to other areas too. That means one can now have a situation, as the Vilna Gaon said, I think we mentioned in the shiur a week or two ago, the Vilna Gaon, when he was about to die and was crying and his Talmidim said to him, "What are you crying about?" And he said, "I'm leaving a world where for a few cents you can buy a pair of tzitzis, you can buy a lulav and esrog, a little bit of money, you can buy a mitzvah. It's so easy. You can take material assets and you can buy Kedusha with material assets. I'm going into a world where you can't trade. That's what Olam Habo is. That's what the world to come is. It's a wonderful world, but there's no trading. There are no markets there. There's no stock market. There's no financial market. There's no Torah market. There's no market. You can't trade. You can't deal. You come with what you've got. And there's no swapping. There's no bartering. There's no investment. That's it. That's the difference between Olam Habo and this world. There's no other difference, really. All the other differences are consequences of that difference. It's a world in which there's no further investment. There's no further trading. And that's why the Vilna Gaon said, I'm crying. I'm not crying because I'm scared that I won't have an Olam Habo. He knows that he was a tzaddik, he knows that he'll have an Olam Habo, but he doesn't have the opportunity to continue investing with such ease and to achieve these kind of returns. Imagine if you're in a situation, if you've discovered a business, you've worked out a business scheme where for every rand you invest, you get 100,000 rand out within a week. Say you found such a business. And you start off, you put 100 rand in, a week later you've got 100,000 rand in. You put your 100,000 rand in, a week later you've got, 10 million rand or whatever it is. You put your 10 million rand in, and a week later you've got your, whatever it is. It gets bigger. It gets very, very much bigger, very quickly. And imagine all of it, you're getting used to this now. You actually start getting used to it. It's amazing what kind of wealth one can actually get used to. I once met a fellow who told me that when he's looking for parking in town, it's cheaper for him to dump his Rolls Royce and buy another one than to spend his time looking for a parking place. Because what he earns in terms of his time, he can buy more Rolls Royces in the time. It just doesn't pay him to walk around and I'm looking for a parking place. And people get used to living like that. Never. Imagine when that suddenly stops. Even if you've got a lot stashed up, your bank account is pretty full, but all of a sudden that business facility stops. You feel devastated. You've gotten accustomed to that way of operating. That's what Olam Hazeh is. That's exactly what Olam Hazeh is. You put a little bit of money in, and with that you're able to reap enormous benefits. Enormous benefits. Comes the end of our life, that facility stops. And no matter how big the bank account is, the fact that we can no longer invest makes us feel very limited in a sense, and makes us wonder about whether we've utilized our opportunities to the full or not. That's the Chiddush of Shabbos, that we can do that. Look at a thing like Tzedakah. What is Tzedakah? The Gemara says that Yesi b'mashe balabayis tzorech l'oni, more than the rich man needs the poor man, more than the poor man needs the rich man needs the poor man. But the poor man needs some money, true. So he goes around, he asks for some help. And what will happen if you won't give him the help? Somebody else will give him the help. Hashem is not going to let him go, not going to let him die. He'll get his income. Somehow or another he'll be okay. No Jew has ever died of hunger, they say. Jews have died of embarrassment, too ashamed to ask. But if a Jew has had to ask for help, he's always found some help somewhere. So that's not his problem. Why were poor people created, the Medrash says? What was the reason for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it? If Hashem looks after everybody, why does he make poor people altogether? To give the rich person the opportunity to do its tzedakah. So you take a few rand out of your pocket and you give it to a genuine poor person. What's it cost you? It's cost you a couple of rand. What have you got for that? You've bought Kedusha. You've bought a mitzvah. You've bought something else altogether. I was told that Rabbi Tanza said at this tragic funeral on Friday that to want to live, that's animal. Animals want to live. To be willing to let other people live is human. That's already a human quality. But to help other people live is divine. That's not even a human quality. But to do something which helps another person live, what does it cost you? It costs very little. What's its future value? Enormous. And what are we really talking about in terms of our definitions and understandings of the last 3 weeks? We're talking about this energy and matter conversion. That you can convert energy into matter and matter into energy. It's the same principle. That you can take a material thing, you can take money, or you can take material effort and energy, time, and you can convert that into a force which is so powerful. That's the force of Kedusha, that's that force of sanctity, that's that light, that energy that we talked about with which the world was originally created. So the act of the creation of the world was creating energy, God opening himself up and releasing energy, and from that energy was created matter. That was the process of creation. Human creativity is exactly the opposite. Human creativity is taking matter and turning that back into energy. That's when we become creative. to take material things and create forces of energy out of those material things. That's how the human being creates. It's exactly the opposite dynamic of the creativity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in the Kabbalah, in the Zohar, that's referred to as the forces of from above to below, or the forces from below to above. And it's in the Tator, the Bar, from the top to the bottom, from the bottom to the top. What you have is a completely different dynamic. The action is the same. The wonder is the same. It's no more wondrous to create energy out of matter than it is to create matter out of energy. Both of them are acts of creation. To be able to take a few rand and convert it into Kedusha, that's an act of creation. To be able to take Kedusha, to be able to take energy and to convert that into money or into something material, that's also an act of creation. So when a businessman takes an idea and with his energy and forcefulness he converts that idea into money, that's the dynamic which is the same as when Hashem created the world. He's taking an idea, he's taking energy, and he's converting that energy into matter. When a tzaddik takes matter and he does a mitzvah with it, when he takes money and he does a mitzvah with it, he's converting the matter back into energy. And so it's always this conversion process. Of course, you've got a large part of the population who do neither. They just wander around, swapping matter for matter, energy for energy. They don't become involved in the dynamic of the exchange between energy and matter, which is really the essence of what life is all about. What we need to be doing at all times is either energy into matter or matter into energy. That's the creative drive and creative force of the human being. What about this ability to create, to turn energy into matter? That's the force of business. To take energy, to take an idea, and to turn it into matter. A disturbing medrash. Two medrashim we'll learn tonight. Both of them are disturbing. Ma'aseh b'talmid echod shel Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. This is a medrash in Pekuda, actually, in next week's parsha. There was a case with a Talmud of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Sheyotzo chutz loretz uvo oshir. He left Eretz Israel and he went to America and he made a lot of money. V'hoyu ha-talmidim roye noisoy, and the Talmidim saw him come back. The Talmidim who were left in Eretz Israel were very, very poor. There was no money available and they suffered enormous poverty. And this guy who had gone off to overseas and made a lot of money and came back and was well dressed and well fed and supporting his children very nicely, they saw him umekanin boy and they got jealous. They were jealous. They thought this is not fair. And you can imagine there was pressure from their wives and their children. Look what happened to him. He went for a couple of years to Chutz Loretz and he's come back a rich man. Why don't you do the same? Take a year or two off your learning. It's not the end of the world. You'll make enough money and you'll come back and you'll be able to learn very comfortably. You won't have to worry about anything. Why live in such poverty?
Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon knew about this. He understood what was happening.
So he took his Talmidim out, he took his whole yeshiva on an outing, and he took them to a big valley. And Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai turned to Hashem and he davened, and he said, O valley, fill yourself with Krugerrands. Krugerrands, gold coins started falling out of the mountain and filling up the valley. Thousands and thousands of them.
Amalei, he said to them, Imzov atem avakshim, so you want money, you don't have to go overseas.
Harezov, pluvachim, there's as much as you want, take whatever you want. Don't have to worry.
Elo, but there's a condition. Hey, you yoidim, you need to know. Kol mishu hu noitel achshov, chelkoi shel oilam habo hu noitel.
If you help yourself now with pleasure, but you're helping yourself from your own Olam Haba account. You're not getting somebody else's money. There's nothing for nothing in this world. This is your own. What I've pulled into this valley is what's set aside to you in the world to come. If you want to take it in gold, help yourselves. But you're taking what ought to belong to the world to come.
She'ein matn schar atoiro elo Olam Haba.
Because you need to know that the reward for learning Torah is an Olam Haba. So all your years of learning can be cashed in. If you want it in cash, here it is. Take it. Help yourself. So the first thing we need to understand is, based on our previous shiurim, it's now easy to understand, the transferability, the convertibility of energy to matter and matter to energy, of Kedusha to matter and matter to Kedusha. It's an easy thing.
So as a result of all that learning, they had developed an enormous asset base of energy. And all that Rabbi Shimon Yochai did with his tefillah is he said to Hashem, convert that energy into matter and let them see what it looks like. Let them see visually what they've stored up for themselves all these years that they've been learning. So that we can understand. What's difficult to understand is they didn't ask for anything for nothing. They didn't want to pick up gold coins from the valley. Their idea was to go overseas and do some business. Their idea was to become productive, to work. Is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai suggesting that even the money that we earn as a result of our labor, of our work, is taken off Olam Haba? That's quite a disturbing thought. That means that if I choose not to work, I choose to learn full time and to live a life of poverty, then all my merit, whatever I'm earning, I'm exchanging into credit for Olam Haba. I'm turning into energy, into spiritual energy, and I'll be able to use it when I get up there. But if we're saying no, but what happens if I go out to work and I earn money from my work? Well, that's coming off from Olam Haba. Is that really fair? Is that what it really means? What we've got to say is the following. We choose what currency we want to work in. We make the choice. There are no foreign exchange restrictions. There's no exchange control. And we can choose what currency we want to operate in. Do we want to operate in energy or do we want to operate in matter? That's our choice. If a person chooses a life of Torah without working, then what he's saying is, I'm willing to make sacrifice or investment. I'm willing to sacrifice my material wealth for a life of Torah. I'm not going to work as other people do. I'm not going to earn an income as other people do. I'm going to sit and learn Torah. And if that means poverty, then so be it. What is that person actually declaring? He's declaring that his only currency of interest is spiritual currency. He's interested in energy. He's not interested in matter. In which case, all the reward for whatever he does, his actions are translated into energy. Every mitzvah he does is translated into energy, as everybody's is. But it's stored as energy. And let's discuss for a moment the concept of storage. We said gold was very precious and gold was very valuable. And the reason the Medrash gave for that, or one of the reasons, is because a small amount of gold stores an enormous amount of wealth, which makes gold very transportable. That means you can have a little coin and with that you can buy a lot of things. That makes it very valuable. It's concentrated wealth. But we need to understand that there's wealth even more concentrated than that. And that is the wealth that is stored as energy, not as matter altogether. So you can get more and more concentrated. You can take property. You can take property in the Karoo. So you need hundreds of thousands of acres in order to have an asset that's worth anything. And you sell your property in the Karoo, your hundreds and thousands of acres, and you buy in the outlying areas of Johannesburg, you can buy 5 acres. And you sell your 5 acres and you can buy 1 acre in Johannesburg. And you sell your 1 acre in Johannesburg and you can buy a few square meters in New York. And you sell your few square meters in New York and you can buy a little diamond that big. So as you concentrate your wealth, you're getting into a smaller and smaller item. And as you're getting smaller and smaller, the item is becoming more and more precious. It's becoming more and more valuable. How far can you go in working to something small, to store your wealth in something very, very concentrated? You can go to the point where you're storing it in units of spiritual energy. That's the area where wealth can be best stored. Now again, I'm asking you to do some lateral thinking. I'm asking you to understand that you've got to be able to shift your thinking from spiritual to material. Just as, what example should I give you? It might be difficult for a person to understand. You've got some rands over here and you're traveling overseas. So you change your rand for dollars. And you come overseas, you've got dollars. And your child might say to you, where do these dollars come from? You say, they're mine. And the child will say to you, but where do you get them from? And you'll say, I worked for them. And he'll say, no, you worked, you got rands. You didn't get dollars. Where do you get the dollars from? I exchanged them, no problem. I worked for rand, I exchanged them for dollars. We understand that exchangeability. We need to be able to expand our convertibility ideas into understanding that just as you can change rands for dollars, or you used to be able to, and just as you can change dollars for objects, you can buy things with dollars, so you can also move backwards and forwards from physical assets to spiritual assets. That's the principle of Shabbos, that you can invest matter and get spiritual. You can invest money and you can get Kedusha. And Kedusha is the most concentrated form of wealth storage. And what this Medrash teaches us is that you can call that wealth back. No problem. If you've got your wealth stored in spiritual units and you want it paid out in cash, you mispalel. That's what davening is. You say to Hashem, please pay me out in cash. And if that's important to you, if you're living a life where cash is more important to you than Kedusha, Hashem will pay you in cash gladly. That's why there's some horrible people who do very well financially, because Hashem pays them out in cash. They've declared that money is what's important to them. Money is what's important to you. Hashem pays them out all their good deeds, and they do lots of good deeds as well. They raise families, and they give a bit of charity, and they're kind, and they employ people. For all the good deeds they're doing, Hashem pays them out in cash all the time, because they've declared they want to be paid out in cash. We determine the currency. If a person says, no, I want to work, I want to be like an ordinary human being, I want to go out and work for money, I want to earn a living, I want to earn a nice living, what is he saying? I'm willing to sacrifice time, that means I'm willing to sacrifice opportunity to earn money. That means I'm making a declaration that money has a value to me in excess of Kedusha, in excess of sanctity. Now of course there are degrees. A person who works 7 days a week is saying, only money is important to me, sanctity has no value to me. A person who works 6 days and stops on the seventh day on Shabbos is saying, yes, money is important to me, but still, Kedusha is more important to me. So I want as much money as I need to live nicely, but I want the rest of it stored up in units of Kedusha. We're actually making these declarations by the way we're living. We're actually telling Hashem what proportion we want to be paid out in cash and what proportion we want Him to keep. That's what we're saying all the time. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Yochai is saying to his Talmidim. You've chosen to be paid out 100% in energy units, in spiritual units. And that's why you're poor. If you want to go out and work, you're actually asking Hashem to change the ratio and to pay you out part here. Fine, you don't have to go to America for that. I'll get it into the valley for you in gold coins. Help yourself, it's yours. That's the power of the convertibility of the one into the other. There's another medrash. Ma'ase b'Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta shebo erev Shabbos v'lo hayo lo ma'an lehispanes. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta came one erev Shabbos, one Friday afternoon, and he had nothing to eat in the house. There was nothing. Yotzo lo min ha'ir, he went out of town. Bispalo lifnei Elokim, and he davened to Hashem. He prayed. V'nisan lo yevan tov min ha'shamayim. And a diamond came down from heaven. Nosno lashulchoni, he gave the diamond to the banker. Ufilis is a Shabbos, and he was able to buy whatever he needed for Shabbos and probably much more. Amro ishto mehechan elu, his wife got very suspicious. They had nothing to eat, they're terribly poor. He goes out of town for a few hours and comes back with the most beautiful Shabbos all organized. Omale, he says to him, I got it from Hashem. She says, huh? I don't believe that kind of nonsense. God doesn't dish out food. If you don't tell me where you got it from, I won't touch it. I won't eat it, and it'll all go to waste. He told her the story. I went out of town, and I davened to Hashem, and he gave me a precious stone, and I went and changed it, and I bought. She said, She says, Hashem gave it to you, huh? Interesting. I will only eat if you promise me that Motzeh Shabbos you'll give it back to Hashem. Imagine that. What did she think he was going to do, actually? Get some kind of spaceship and go up and wait, how are you going to give it back to Hashem? But that was the deal. Either you're going to give it back to Hashem or I don't touch it. Again, before we discussed that, what we have over the last 3 weeks, this medrash would sound totally absurd. How can you take food, good, so you can sell the food, you'll get money. With the money you can buy a precious stone again. So now you've got your diamond. So far I can understand, you've exchanged assets for assets. But how do you give it back to Hashem? How do you take that diamond now and convert it back into spiritual power? Omar lo lomo, he says to her, but why? Why do you want me to give it back to Hashem? He doesn't say it's impossible, he just says, why? On the way, she says, don't you realize where that diamond comes from? It comes from your account in Olam Habo. That's where it comes from. Do you want to get to Olam Habo and find that you've got nothing there? Or that you've got a diminished account there? That there's something missing from your estate in Olam Habo, and your friends are all with a full estate, and you'll have to sit there for the rest of eternity with something lacking which you'll never be able to make up because there's no investing up there. For the rest of eternity, you'll have to sit with a chip on your table because that was given to you as the diamond here for the Shabbos. I don't want that. Now he was in a bit of a fix. He didn't know what to do, Rabbi Shimon. So he went and told Rabbi the story. Imagine telling him the story. He went and asked Hashem. Hashem gave me the diamond. Came home. My wife won't touch anything. What do I do now? He said to him, you don't have to worry. Tell him, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, if your table is missing anything in Olam Habo, you come and collect from me. I don't believe anything will be missing, and I'll make good anything you're missing. He felt good and went and told her, it's all organized. You don't have to worry, you can enjoy your Shabbos meal, because if Taka will come up there and find that something's missing, Rebbe has guaranteed that he'll make it up. I want to see the so-and-so who's been teaching you Torah. I want to have a word with him. Take me to him on Friday afternoon before Shabbos. Amraloi Rebbe, she said to him, Rebbe, nice guarantee you've given us. I want to know what it's worth. Do you think we can trade with each other up there? I understand Olam Haba to be a place where people don't interact in that way, where people can't exchange and cannot trade. What are you giving me a guarantee? And I know we're going to get up there and we're not going to be able to make it. You know, it's like that, they did that candid camera thing in South Africa. I remember they did these years ago. And there was that lovely one with a fellow who's in a park in Cape Town. And he's got wings, he's trying to fly. And he gets a colored fellow to, he says, look, just help me, I'm going to run. And just when I tell you to lift me up so that I can take off. So the colored fellow says, what's in it for me? So the fire guy's trying to fly. He says, 10 rand, is that okay? He says, fine, good, let's go. So he starts running down and he's flapping his wings and he's about to tell the colored fellow to lift him up. And the colored fellow says, hey boss, stop. You're too clever. I know what's going to happen. You go flying off. When am I going to get my 10 rand? So that's what she says, Lahavdil, that's what she says to Rebbe, very nice. You'll fix us up in Olam Habo. I know what happens in Olam Habo. There's no market, there's no trading. What do you mean you're going to fix us up in Olam Habo? Kivan Sheshomake, when Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta heard his wife's argument, Holach Behechsu, he went and gave it back. Rabbi Seinu Omru, Haneso Achron, Yokoshe Me'arishon, the Rabbein said that the second miracle was much harder to perform than the first one. Kivan sheposhat yodo lahachaziroi, he stretched out his hand to return the diamond, miyad yorod hamalach unatolo himeno, and an angel came and took it from him. Again, we see this beautiful image of being able to exchange, being able to take something from the Olam Haba account, translate it into money, take the money, translate it back into Kedusha. This facility to be able to exchange from one to the other is a facility that the human being has. We can turn assets into Kedusha, and we can turn Kedusha into assets. Turning assets into Kedusha is the function, is the purpose of the human being. Turning Kedusha into assets is not what we're meant to be doing. That's not the idea. How do we do that? The human being is the only transformer. He's the dynamo. Just like you've got a nuclear power station, can convert matter into energy. The human being is the nuclear power station. The world has energy in it and the world has matter. The world has kedusha and the world has material things. It has sanctity, it has energy, it has force, and it has matter. Only the human being can convert the one to the other. Only the human being can take kedusha, can take an idea, can take energy and turn it into something material. Only a human being can do it. Animals can't do that. Animals can eat what's already there. They can't create. They can't take an idea and make it work. They can't be productive. Productivity is creativity. Productivity means to take energy and to convert that energy into matter, to convert that energy into money. But the human being can also do the opposite. He can take money and he can convert that into energy. He can convert that into kedusha. But only the human being can do that, and that is the human function. The human function is to be involved in the conversion of matter to energy and energy to matter. And he does that, as the parasha says, "Kechu me'itchem trumo laHashem." Take from yourselves. Just look at the wording already is so absurd if we don't understand the principles that we've been developing in the shir. Take from yourselves a donation for Hashem. What is Hashem going to do with the donation? And what is the donation? Gold, silver, copper, purple, threads, skins. What's Hashem going to do with all that? What value does a material thing have to Hashem? The value is that we can convert it. That by using it properly and using it for a mitzvah, that becomes spiritual value. There is such a thing as a gift to Hashem. That's what a korban is. A korban is to take something material and to convert it into energy. And how do we do that? We do that in several ways. We put it on the mizbeach. So we elevate it. And we burn it. So there's that image already of converting it into energy. And the kohanim eat part of it. That's also conversion, like food. They take it into their bodies. Kohanim, oichli, mabayli, miskaprim. That through a physical act of consumption on the part of the kohen, the baal, the owner of the korban, is miskaper. He has a kapor, he has atonement. How does that all link together? The source of atonement is Hashem. How can a kohen eat a good lunch? And while he's eating his lunch, because he's eating his lunch, I'm atoned for. What's the method? What's the mechanism? The mechanism is I'm taking my lamb and I'm converting that into energy, partially through the kohen, by him absorbing it into himself. He takes that and makes that part of the energy with which he serves Hashem. And that act of converting my lamb that I bought with my money into an energy that sustains the kohen in his service of Hashem, that goes to Hashem and comes back to me in the form of the spiritual force of kapora, of atonement. That's the kind of conversion that is taking place all the time. And so when it says, k'chu me'ibchem trumo la'Hashem, give a donation to God, give a gift to the Ribbono shel Olam, that's exactly what it means. We have that capacity. The human being has the capacity to take an object and convert it into a currency that Hashem can deal in. To convert it into a currency that Hashem can benefit from, so to say. That the human being has that ability to do that. But the key to it, the Kleyoko says, what does it mean, k'chu me'ibchem, take from yourselves? And he gives two perushim for it. Shekol echod yizdorez lemitzvah me'atzmoy. Everybody should be motivated for this mitzvah from within himself. Ki yesh lecha adam she'eino noisen klum ad shereyim achirim noisenim u'miskanei bohem. Haken hu noisen l'hishoves atzmoy lohem. Sometimes a person gives a donation, not because he really wants to, but he sees everybody else's and he wants to become part of it and he wants to be the same as them, he doesn't want to be embarrassed, so he gives. And that's not called from within you. Me'itchem, that word me'itchem comes from the word es. And the word es can mean from within you or from you itself. So me'itchem means, the first way that Kleyoko learns it is from within himself. Ki hu atzmo ein sibo, and anasinu el achirim sibo. The motivating force of that act of charity are other people, it's society. And if society is the motivating force, that's not me'itchem. So the condition here of k'chu me'itchem, in order to make it a truma la'Hashem, in order to convert that matter into something spiritual, the first condition is that it's